Okay. Welcome everybody to the first virtual committee hearing of the House Commerce Committee. I'll start by calling the meeting to order. Simon, do we have a quorum?
We do have a quorum. I can still go through it if you'd like for the public's sake.
Yes. Would you please do that?
Sure. I'll call the roll.
Thank you.
Representative Halverson.
Hold on a second. I got to unmute everyone. Give me a second to unmute everyone.
Got it.
Got to go. Take it a little slower.
Yep.
All right. You can. Okay. Go ahead and go ahead.
Okay. Here. Representative. Yes. Representative Stevenson.
Here.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Present, but not able to get the video link.
Got it. Representative Carlson.
Here.
Representative Davids.
Here.
Representative Dean.
Here.
Representative Elkins.
Here.
Representative Garofalo.
Here.
Representative Haley.
Here.
Representative Howard.
Here.
Representative Cotiza-Watoon.
Here.
Representative Crenshaw.
Here.
Representative Lesh.
Here.
Representative Lislegard. I know he's coming later, maybe. Representative Mahoney.
Here.
Representative O'Neill.
Present.
Representative Richardson.
Here.
Representative Swazinski. Representative Kabke.
Here.
Representative Tice.
Here.
All right, so we have 18 members with just Representatives Lislegard and Swazinski not here at the moment.
Thank you very much, Simon. Everyone is muted again while we have this conversation. The muting, I'm sure as folks understand, is to ensure that everyone can hear the person who is speaking to the group without background noise. I don't know about you, but I've had multiple interruptions by dogs during meetings over the past several weeks. And so I hope that my family stays quiet for a short period of time while we have this meeting. To begin, I just want to make clear to everybody on the call, on the Zoom call, and everybody watching that no inappropriate behavior, images, or language will be tolerated. And if anything inappropriate it breaks into our committee hearing, we will immediately recess and reconvene when that order is restored, if folks are okay with that. You can email or text Travis if you want to be recognized. I'll let Travis give you that contact information, and he will keep track of who from the committee would like to be recognized at any point during the meeting. Travis?
That should have been sent out via earlier. If you need that information, contact your researcher. I'd prefer not to blast it out over the airwaves. So,
and I sent out the number about half an hour before we started.
Both researchers have my cell phone. They should be able to get a hold of me if you need it.
Okay. If anybody is having any trouble, just give us a high sign, let us know, and we'll make sure that you can get that information. The first item on our agenda for action is approval of the minutes from March 11th, 2020, which seems like a very long time ago. Has anybody had the opportunity to review the minutes that were sent out by Simon earlier today?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
It's Zach.
Hi, Zach.
I would move the minutes.
Representative Stevenson moves the minutes of March 11th, 2020. Is there any discussion to that motion? And you may just ask by voice to be recognized. And you can unmute for your folks there. Hearing no discussion. We can do a voice vote. Everyone should be unmuted. Is that correct, Travis? All those in favor of approval of the minutes, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Hearing no opposition, the minutes are approved. We have one bill on our agenda. We are going to do an informational we are going to move forward with our agenda on the bill, the wine and beer to go bill that is before us. It is an informational only hearing. We're not going to take action on the bill, but we will be taking testimony. And so we don't need a motion to move the bill. We could start with a walkthrough of the bill, barring any anybody else having another opinion. Happy to hear it. But I would like to start by asking Chris Kleeman to walk us through the bill, if that is okay.
Representative Halverson, before we begin the walkthrough, Representative Swedzinski has joined the meeting.
Oh, welcome, Representative Swedzinski. We're happy to have you. Okay, thank you. Mr. Kleeman, are you available to walk us through the, if you are unmuted?
Yep. Okay. Yep, I think I'm unmuted. Yeah, so I'll do the walkthrough of the bill. I'll be fairly brief, but if anybody wants more details, just feel free to ask. What the bill does in general, it allows a restaurant to sell limited quantities of beer and wine with a prepared food takeout order. And prepared food is, meals that are being prepared by the restaurant, so not pre-made. The bill also, further specifies the restaurants that can do this. You have to be a qualifying licensee, which means you have to have an on-sale license as a restaurant under a specifically designated statute. And so essentially that means you have a restaurant license, or you're a restaurant with a wine license, or you have a on-sale license as a restaurant through the city or county. For tap rooms, they would not be included in this because tap rooms don't have a license as a restaurant. They have a tap room license, so they would not be a qualifying licensee. The other piece of this prepared food takeout order is that the sale of beer and wine has to be incidental to a food order. So the idea is that you're ordering a dinner and you can order that with drinks. So if you're getting theoretically, if you're getting, one small order of French fries and you're maxing out on your alcohol order, that's probably not incidental. The basic, issue here is the state's regulatory scheme between on and off sale liquor, just so everyone is aware. If you have a license as a restaurant, you have a license that allows the sale of alcohol for on-premises consumption. If you want to make a sale of alcohol and the intent is to have somebody take that out of the restaurant and drink it off the premises, you need an off-sale license. So this is a limited off-sale authority that the restaurants have, and they currently can't do that. As for the limits go, it's a restaurant can sell a six-pack or equivalent. It'd be 12-ounce containers of beer, cider, or hard seltzer, and in addition to that, a 750-milliliter container of wine, so a bottle of wine and a six-pack of beer. The special authority to do off-sale under the bill lasts until the executive order closing places of public accommodation that these restaurants are subject to is lifted in some way. I think I'll say a little bit about what the bill does as far as where the sales have to happen and get into the delivery issue a little bit. The sales have to be from the restaurant premises, and the bill also specifically prohibits delivery. So there's no delivery by a third party that's allowed under the bill, and then the restaurant itself could also not do delivery. So this would be takeout liquor sales with prepared food orders that are for pickup and not delivery. There's some complexities here with brew pubs that I'll get into in just a minute, but that's the general scheme of it. And then the bill also applies a number of regulatory provisions that already exist in the liquor chapter. for off-sale to the restaurants who are going to have or going to use their off-sale authority. So for instance, there are age verification laws that apply to this. Also, the local and state off-sale hours of sale provisions would also apply. So if you have a municipality that's limited off-sale hours more stringently than what state law allows, you know, those would also be applicable to these sales. Other age verification provisions, service to intoxicated persons, that's all specifically in the bill. The other piece of this is that a restaurant who wants to do this does not have to get a new license. So this is a limited authority that doesn't require a new license for these for the restaurants. There's also a provision that requires a restaurant to notify their liability insurer that they're going to begin to make off sales in case there are implications there. And there's also a provision that clarifies that nothing in the bill affects any current off-sale authority that a restaurant that already has off-sale authority can use to make off-sales. And that gets a little bit into the brew pub issue. Brew pubs and small breweries, if they have an off-sale license to sell growlers, they're currently authorized under state law and rule to make deliveries of those growlers. So for brew pubs, this gets a little interesting because, you know, the brew pubs are also restaurants. They're also allowed a full on-sale intoxicating a liquor license as a restaurant. So for brew pubs, if they want to make off-sales of growlers, they can just deliver those. But if they want to sell, other kinds of beer that's not their own product and wine, then that would have to be for a pickup order. And so that provision just clarifies that while nothing's changing for the brew pubs in terms of their current off-sale authority. So, Madam Chair, that's the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kleeman. And I just would like to say thank you to everybody who helped us craft the bill and ask the right questions. The way this came about is that we had a group of bars and restaurants who came forward with an idea and a proposal, and a lot of questions got asked. And so I think I wanted everybody to know that we included the League of Minnesota Cities in talking about this. We reached out to insurers. We talked to other folks involved with bars, restaurants, deliveries, and all that to make sure that people were covered with regard to liability and cities retain their statutory authority. The cities do have an opportunity to opt out of allowing this additional license if they do so by resolution. So we do get the cities continue to have their statutory authority over licensing in their communities as well. So with that, I think that if there are any questions for Mr. Kleeman, we can certainly entertain those. I don't think anyone's on the list at this time, but I'll give you a moment. Still not hearing any indication of questions for Mr. Kleeman. So feel free to get on the list if a question does come up. With that, I think that we are ready to move to public testimony, Travis.
Sure, if you just want to give me 1 second, our first testifier, we're having a little bit of connection problems. Just give me a few seconds to figure it out. If I can't, then we'll move on to our second one and come back to him. So just give me 30 seconds to figure it out.
That sounds good. And I'll just let all the committee members know that everybody who has signed up to testify was notified that we're limiting public testimony to 3 minutes apiece. Is that what they were notified? Just to confirm, Travis, that's what they were notified.
Yes, 3 minutes.
Thank you. I will point out, as everybody's sitting here, for everybody's interest, that Representative Elkins managed to get himself into our actual hearing room. Congratulations. on your clever use of backgrounds, Representative Elkins.
All right, I'm still working on it, so I'm going to move on to the next one. Liz from the hospitality, I'm going to admit to the hearing and then unmute, and she can begin her testimony, and I will do my best to try and circle back to our first testifier just when we figure all of that out. So letting her in now, and then when it appears she's ready, she can begin. Not seeing audio with her. There we go. If Liz is ready from the hospitality, go ahead and begin.
Is that working?
Welcome. I see you now. Yes. Welcome to the committee. Thank you for participating in this unusual virtual setup. If you could introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Liz Raymer. I'm the CEO of Hospitality Minnesota. We're the trade association that represents restaurants, lodging, resorts, and campgrounds with some 2. Are you ready for me to come back?
I believe so. I believe we still have you here. So do you want to continue?
Okay. I wasn't sure it was coming through. I was getting a recording. So I was saying that we represent some 2,000 operations throughout our state. And we're grateful for your consideration of this legislation, allowing restaurants to temporarily provide alcohol to go during this current crisis. And we urge swift passage of this legislation. Hospitality business. Okay.
I believe we can still hear and see you. Is there a problem on your end they're experiencing?
I'm trying to figure out if you've got me or not, if this is live or.
Yep, we still have you here. We can see and hear. So,
okay, then I'll just keep going here.
Yep.
So, hospitality businesses employ more than 300,000 people, accounting for 1 in 10 jobs, and then they generate $16 billion in sales per year, remitting 18% of the state sales tax in Minnesota. So, currently, these businesses are being financially crushed by the COVID-19 crisis, and they need our support and help to survive. Hospitality businesses across the state have laid off their workers, and many have shuttered, some permanently already. And the data we have is really startling. The restaurant industry has lost an estimated $324 million in sales and more than 51,000 jobs just during the first 22 days in March. And we now hear from the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development that over 75,000 unemployment claims come from just the food service sector alone. Between March 23 and 26, the National Restaurant Association surveyed 4,500 restaurants around the country and found that in Minnesota, 3% of operators had already been forced to close permanently. Another 11% reported having to do so in the next month. And this was before the stay-at-home order in Minnesota. Last week, Hospitality Minnesota conducted a survey, and over half of the hospitality business we heard from told us that under the current conditions, they will have to close permanently within 1 to 3 months. And so this is an economic disaster, not just for these operators, their workers, and their families, but to the economy of our state and our local communities, which rely so heavily on this critical industry. Allowing restaurants to temporarily provide alcohol to go would provide much needed revenue and an infusion to businesses that are currently cash strapped. The current takeout and drive-through curbside pickup for food options is only deriving a small fraction of revenue for these restaurants that they normally would get in regular conditions. So adding alcohol to go provides one more tool in the toolbox. We continue to hear from our operators who indicate this may be the difference between whether their businesses make it or not. Many other states have already moved to allow such sales given the current economic crisis. Over 19,000 Minnesotans have now signed a petition asking Minnesota to take similar action. Each day represents a potential for additional revenue to help businesses stay afloat. It's in every citizen's best interest that everything possible is done now to support Minnesota's hospitality businesses and help them survive to the other side of this crisis. Again, we ask that you take swift action to pass this legislation to allow restaurants to sell alcohol to go and provide a much needed revenue source to these businesses. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. And we will have time for member questions after we hear from the other testifiers. I appreciate your time. Travis, who would you like to?
Did we lose Representative Halverson?
I just added her back in.
Oh.
Chairman Halverson, you're back.
I was temporarily in the waiting room. I don't know what I perhaps did something wrong. I'll try to behave.
I accidentally sent you to the waiting room instead of the testifier. My apologies. This is going swimmingly. I'm really loving this media here. So we'll bring up again. I'm having trouble connecting our first testifier, so I'll keep going down the list. And when I can figure it out with him, we'll get him back up. So.
You just got muted, Travis.
I believe it's Lauren from the Craft Brewers, so I'll admit her. One thing House Info wanted me to let the testifiers know is that if you're watching the live feed, there is a delay. And so that's probably why there was a miscommunication about when testifiers were actually starting. So don't focus on the live feed once you begin your testimony, because there is a bit of a delay. So that's probably what we were running into before. So Lauren, you look like you're ready to go, so you may begin.
Sounds good. Thank you. My name is Lauren Bennett McGinty. I am the executive director of the Minnesota Craft Brewers Guild. We represent over 150 breweries in the state of Minnesota. And thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for having us here today. Like I said, I am here on behalf of more than 150 brewery members and 4,500 employees, which has lately turned to about 50% of that number. That's full-time and part-time. Because as you know, breweries were also forced to shut down when the governor issued the executive order in March. So while many of our breweries agree that it is definitely the safest choice to slow the spread of the coronavirus to close their breweries, they can all say that it could potentially end their businesses. And as you can see from the distributed impact report, 100% of them lost their foot traffic because they had to close, and nearly 75% of them lost 100% of distributed draft sales to bars and restaurants and other areas of accommodation because they are also closed and can no longer serve beer on tap. So I'm not here to argue whether or not we should be closed or open, but I'm here to ask for more help and flexibility within this bill so that we can allow breweries to also have more options for off sale. Please consider allowing this flexibility for these breweries, because restaurants in the state are huge advocates for our craft breweries. They support them through putting them on tap, and now they're asking to be able to sell beer to go, which also would include those craft breweries. What happens when all of our craft breweries in Minnesota close? We would move tons of money outside of state to purchase breweries beer from California or Colorado, but the money wouldn't be coming from inside the state. And craft breweries in the state of Minnesota account for more than $2.1 billion in economic impact. Just this week, we also polled Minnesota breweries and found that 79.4% of them will be closed within the next 6 months. Of course, that projection includes the ability to open on May 13th, but if they cannot open to the public or with severe restrictions on that opening, I believe that we could see that percentage grow and more breweries will close in a shorter period of time. I also continue to hear that restaurants are family-owned businesses and are in danger. The same goes for breweries. In fact, most breweries in Minnesota are family-owned. They have small staffs and the owners do their best to provide benefits. They're manufacturers, they're community supporters, and they are job creators. The Minnesota Craft Brewers Guild, too, is a staff of just 3 individuals, and we are so incredibly proud to support these breweries every day. Even while we have financial worries for our future, we continue to fight for these breweries because they are critical to our communities. We hear over and over again that changes for the liquor industry are complicated and that we need to negotiate with all stakeholders who regularly oppose our efforts. And to be perfectly frank, this is not a valid response to the urgent needs of these families. Those stakeholders have made it clear time and again that even on a temporary basis, they would not support any changes for the liquor industry. While our conversations have been more positive as of late, we do not have time to hope for an agreement someday. The bill proposed to allow restaurants to sell off sale did not include breweries in the conversation. We weren't invited to the table to have those conversations. We are in need of these flexible package options now, today, and in fact, we needed them yesterday. I am saddened and fearful for these breweries. I am concerned for the brewery owners who might have to choose between paying their mortgage or paying their staff. I worry about small towns across Minnesota who have invested in their main streets, of which breweries are a staple, and will have to suffer from permanent closures. Please take a moment to stop politics as usual with regard to liquor legislation. We are asking for this change only for the closure period. It will be temporary. We understand that permanent changes take more time and more conversations, but we can't look to next month or even next session. We need to temporarily allow for these flexible off-sale options to avoid dumping beer down the drain, which equates to hundreds of thousands, if not in some cases, millions of dollars lost. Please understand this is not a luxury. Small businesses aren't playing a long game. They are needing the support now because they're losing their businesses right now. To wrap up, I just want to share a quote from a brewery who replied to our impact survey. I just pray we can make it through this mess. And I agree and pray that the legislature stops ignoring the needs of these breweries. Thank you.
Representative Garofalo, I believe you had a question.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifier, I haven't been involved in the conversations on this issue. To the degree that you feel comfortable, can you tell us who has opposed your inclusion in this bill and what their rationale was for it?
Yes, thank you. Obviously, things have been moving very, very quickly during this period. So we, you know, found out about this probably around the same time that you all did as well. Typical opposition can be heard on today's testimony, which would include the wholesalers as well as the MLBA. you know, we've been working really closely with Hospitality Minnesota, and we've been working with Liz, who previously testified, and know that we're on the same page with them. And I totally understand and support restaurants being able to sell beer to go because it also supports our breweries. But at the same time, we weren't included in any of these conversations, and it impacts the businesses of breweries just as much.
Thank you.
And since I kind of helped with working on this with the Senate, I think that one thing I would ask of the craft brewers, and Ms. McGinty, I think you can answer this question, is it is not clear to me that a proposal has been brought forward on behalf of the craft brewers, and I would be very interested in terms of what your proposal is to sell off sale.
Yes, thank you. So very simply put, we agree that, you know, we won't get everything we've asked for previously, and that is not our intention. We understand the goal is to allow people to move products that they're sitting on, and that is our goal as well. So we would align the ability for a brewery to sell 4 or 6 packs in the same amount that the restaurants are currently being proposed, that amount that they're proposing, sorry. So we are not asking for, you know, the world here. We're asking to just align with them and to have breweries be able to sell that in addition to what they're currently selling. It certainly isn't going to clear all of their inventory overnight, but it could definitely help with moving some of their items out of their stock rooms.
Mm-hmm. I will tell you, I think that all of us feel, you know, a lot of concern for all of our small businesses in Minnesota across the board. And I agree, you know, we have a lot of love for the Minnesota spirit and ingenuity that goes into creating a small business, including breweries. I would highly recommend that we continue conversations offline. This is the first that I have heard from the craft brewing industry with regard to a real proposal for quantity and what we can do to help, save the business, what a real proposal looks like. And so because we have to deal with issues around licensing and liability and other things, I think that it would be helpful to continue a conversation offline so that we can find out and nail down details of what a potential proposal would look like. So I hope that you will continue to talk to me as chair, talk to other legislators who I know engage and have a lot of passion for the craft brewing industry, and work with all of these folks to help pull together a proposal that we can work, because we're doing things like suspending the rules and which the Senate did today. It's an unusual time and an unusual procedure. So I invite you to communicate directly and don't hesitate to make those asks and to work on a proposal. That would be my advice to you.
Thank you.
Sorry. I don't see anyone else on the list, so I think we can move to the next testifier.
It's Laylee from Craft Brewers Guild. She's now unmuted. She can go ahead.
Thank you very much, Travis. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Just to, I'll keep my comments short to just provide some clarity on top of what Lauren has provided. Since the COVID-related shutdown, the Craft Brewers Guild has been working daily to expand alcohol to go options temporarily, and we've been doing those efforts in conjunction with restaurants, bars, as Lauren mentioned. We've been working with Hospitality Minnesota. We've been in consultation with the other groups, and we've provided today in some of the materials that have been provided to the committee, some of the record of, what those conversations have looked like and kind of the joint involvement. The unfortunate thing is that now today we find the breweries on the outside of this bill, where largely we've been asking, as Lauren mentioned, for kind of reciprocal treatment in terms of what it is that we're seeking. I've gone through this bill language, and as best as I can tell, also giving, comparison to what has passed in over 17 other states allowing these kinds of temporary measures, there is nothing unique to the situation of allowing breweries to also sell this quantity of 72 ounces to go. That's substantively different than it would be for restaurants and bars, such that it couldn't be addressed in this provision. And so I just wanted to be available to answer any questions members may have to that regard.
Thank you for your testimony. I'm not seeing anybody in queue for questions, but that may change at the end of the hearing. Travis,
we've got our first testifier, Mike Jennings from MLBA. We got it figured out, so I'm going to let him in, and then he can begin his testimony. Is working on getting him in, and so I've admitted him, and he can just unmute himself, and he can get started.
Welcome to the committee. You can state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Mike Jennings, if you're ready to start, you can, the floor is yours if you want to go ahead. You want to go ahead and start. We can see you here now.
I think we heard you very, very faintly. So if you are not using a handset, if you can, perhaps use a handset on your phone if you're using a phone. And as Travis advised, don't look at the live feed of this meeting as you're giving your testimony.
Okay, I'm going to mute him and communicate with him via email because it sounds like we're having a hard time hearing him. I will talk to him. We'll move on. The next testifier is Lon Larson, and I will get him entered into the room, and then he can begin. Okay, Lon Larson, you are now in the hearing if you want to begin your testimony.
Mr. Larson, you can proceed with your testimony when you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I testified last year, and I got warned a couple times of running long, so I will definitely be under 3 minutes this time.
And let me remind you to be sure to introduce yourself for the record. Thank you.
My name is Lon Larson. I am co-owner of Castle Danger Brewery in Two Harbors, Minnesota. Two Harbors is a tourist-dependent town of only 3,600 people on the Lake Superior's North Shore. Really appreciate the opportunity to support this discussion, and want to highlight a couple things. First and foremost, very excited for our partners in the on-prem world to get some support via this legislation. We do support this legislation. That said, we are discouraged as Castle Danger that it doesn't go further. Like many of the on-prem, we've closed our tap room without on-premise accounts, et cetera, by executive order. We've lost over 60% of our sales and have had to downsize accordingly, over half of our staff. This is on top of another hardship that we experienced last year, which is going over the so-called growler cap. And since October 1st of last year, we were no longer able to sell growlers. So that's where we're really left on the outside as one of only five breweries that can't sell growlers in this situation. And losing growlers for our tap room prior to this was 30% of our revenues and three FTEs. So, but I recognize that this might not be the issue to solve that. But as Chair Halverson knows, I wanted to share for others that might be participating today that Castle Danger, via our Alliance of Minnesota Craft Breweries, are in active negotiations with the stakeholders. We are trying to find a goal that we or a solution we can bring to legislature that you can include in a liquor bill this session, and we're trying to partner with our industry partners. The Alliance is small breweries. It is breweries that are over the cap or soon to be. It's names like Shells, Fulton, Lipridge, and Indeed, and us. We're all small businesses that average 40 to 50 employees and all been extremely hurt by this situation like a lot of people. But we are great contributors to the three-tier system, supporters of it, yet we're discriminated by this current Minnesota law. So again, our goal here ultimately is to, if you can have a tap room, you can sell growlers. It's part of the experience. We're optimistic we can find a solution with the support of Chair Halverson and the House Committee, Senator Dames and the Senate Commerce Committee, and our industry partners, wholesalers, NLB, MMBA, and Teamsters. So in closing, Madam Chair, thank you again. We do support this legislation, and we also look forward to continuing to find a long-term solution for growlers to allow those five breweries in the state that can't participate in that form of off-sale. Thank you.
I don't see anybody with questions. I have a question for you, Mr. Larson, and that is, are you talking about trying to work on a proposal that is a short-term COVID relief proposal? Are you looking for a long-term permanent change, and is that going to be your proposal? Or is there is it a yes and? Is it both?
Our desire is our number one desire is a long-term solution for growlers to get rid of the growler cap. Short-term, we would like the inclusion to be treated on par with all the other on-premises to allow for curbside pickup of growlers, which we currently do not have. We have no way to recoup any of the on-premise sales that we've lost because of the tap room being closed.
And to be clear, it's not every brewery that is unable to sell growlers curbside or do delivery. It is this unique situation because of the current growler cap.
Correct.
Clear about who can and who can't. All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Sorry, not seeing any at this time, but if something comes up, we will let you know, Mr. Larson. Thank you for your testimony. Travis, who is next, sir?
All right, I do believe we finally have it figured out with Mike Jennings, our very first testifier, so I'm going to unmute him now. He is in the room and he can get started.
Thank you. Madam Chair, my name is Mike Jennings and committee. I am a board member for the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, the MLBA, and I'm also an owner of three restaurants in the western suburbs, and we're here today to ask for your help, and our help to help rescue the restaurant and bar industry as we know it today. As with most people, this is unprecedented, and we've been totally caught off guard. Just so you know, restaurants normally don't carry a huge supply of cash in our bank accounts, and we're usually, we don't understand anything like this that could ever happen. But anyways, our number priority right now is to working backwards is to be in business when we're finally able to open, and working backwards to today is unless we figure out how to stay in business during this period. The future won't be there for our employees when the time comes for us to open up. Regardless of how the rest of the economy recovers, if we're not there, it's going to end up being pretty bad. We look at somewhere between 10 and 30% of the restaurants are not going to be able to make it just because they've run out of funds, which causes an even bigger problem with unemployment. As was mentioned previously, there's over 300,000 people that are employed in the restaurant business and bar business, and be able to look at the potential of losing one third of those people, not having a place to go once we reopen would be disastrous. So what it gets down to is pretty much all the restaurants have tried to open up and tried to take out business. And some restaurants are doing really well, and some of them are not doing as well. And just because you just sometimes don't collect enough revenue to be able to pay for the level of labor. I do know that the restaurants that were open, when they gave it a try, they were able to, you know, employ 5, 6, 7, 8 employees during that period of time. So what that does, it gives us an opportunity to provide some immediate employment. As a byproduct of that, the sales, of course, will help keep us as restaurateurs and bar owners in business. Right now, to give you an idea of the impact, as I mentioned, I have 3 restaurants. I'll give you an example. One restaurant that I have being closed up with no labor cost me $24,000 a month. It starts with $12,000 a month in rent, and then it goes downhill from there. Right now, it's going to cost me about $70,000 to $75,000 per month to sit idle. And as you can imagine, there aren't very many restaurants that have that much money in reserves to be able to make it. So the way it works right now, to be able to entice people to come to our restaurant by offering wine or beer is one incentive for people to come visit us. Number two, when they do visit us, we're gonna make an extra $5, $6, $8, $10, $12 off of each order, which may not seem much, but when you add it, multiply it by several dozen orders, it kind of adds up. And anything we can do to chip away at our debt is really, really important. So we're asking you for your assistance here so we can keep the restaurant business going. We're asking for you to help us so that when the time comes to reopen our doors, that we'll have a place for our employees to work. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I apologize for my coworker in the background. We have a question from Representative Tabke.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I have a question for the gentleman from the MLBA about the restaurants and ability to sell beer that they have in kegs today. As why is the need for the MLBA to have prepackaged liquor be the only way that this can, not liquor, prepackaged beer be the only way that that can go out? How come the MLBA hasn't advocated for the ability to sell kegged beer that's already in inventory in restaurants and be able to use that and sell that to the public?
Well, Mr. Jennings, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. You know, that's an interesting question. Number one, to be able to sell kegs, I think it kind of partially defeats the whole purpose of, although it'd be nice to take in that extra money and everything like this, but to order a couple sandwiches or a couple steaks and then a keg of beer to go with it doesn't necessarily make sense from that standpoint. But in terms of prepackaging of beer and so forth, having it come in cans that are already packaged or bottles that are already packaged just eliminates the possibility of something not going right on the way home. If it's too convenient to be able to access it, then it can cause a bigger problem. So we're satisfied with how the wording is with this bill.
Follow-up, Representative Tabke.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair Halverson. Yeah, I did not... maybe it was over technology. It didn't work out so well on my question, but I didn't mean to intimate at all that people would be buying kegs at all. I just meant to be able to use the inventory that they have. And so that's the opposite of what restaurants in my community, in my district, are saying. One of the major things that they want to be able to do is to be able to either to get a canning machine and be able to utilize the inventory that they have today, because they've got thousands of dollars of kegged beer already sitting on their inventory and in their premises that they need to utilize. And we don't know how long this is going to go. And so that's a major issue that we have with the restaurants in my community, that they want to be able to utilize that and sell that as well, however they may be able to, which I think they don't make nearly as much money on selling a can of beer as they would on beer that they've already got as it is. And we want to be able to have them profit on this as much as possible. So is that, am I misunderstanding you, or is that where you're at?
So just so I understand, you're Mr. talking Dennings. About...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
No, you're fine. That's an odd situation. Okay, go okay. ahead, sir.
So you're asking about people being able to can their own keg beer. Is that what you're asking?
Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, that as an option, if they have the beer available, to be able to utilize that beer, whether they were to can it themselves or whether they were to sell it in other packages and that kind of thing, that's their piece. But I just want to understand why, from your perspective, we can't do that.
Well, Mr. Jennings.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. We didn't write the exact wording of this bill, and it asks for pre-packaged beer, and I'm not certain whether or not taking beer from kegs or and then putting them into a package and then pre-packaging them is would qualify or not. And I guess that all depends on how the interpretation of the bill is.
Representative Tabke.
I am good from that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And I think that we're going to hear from the beer wholesalers, so we might have some more information. But I think a follow-up question may be for you, Mr. Jennings, or if you want to wait until Mr. Madigan testifies, is I understand that some restaurants have chosen to return inventory to wholesalers, and I don't and that's so that they're sitting on less. And do you want to just clarify, Mr. Jennings, what that process is and how that works for bar and restaurant owners if they're returning inventory? Or
well, generally we have, generally speaking, not in these times, is 30 days to return product as long as they're in original packages. We're kind of at 30 days coming up here really close. We've had some of our distributors tell us that they'll take it back beyond that if necessary. The state's alcohol and gambling website just strictly says is that restaurants and bars can send it back and that the distributors can resell to liquor stores. So that seems pretty accommodating. But normally it's 30 days under normal circumstances. I'm not certain. But I know that I know one thing for certain, talking to one of our beer distributors, is they're going to have to go and pick up all this beer in the state of Minnesota that isn't used and have it brought back to the to where they do their kegging and everything, and they're going to have to empty them all out because they're all going to be past expiration date.
Wow. Well, thank you for that information. Really appreciate it. I don't see any other questions. I'll pause for a moment just to make sure that I'm not missing anybody. Okay, not seeing anybody right now. If anything else comes up, we will let you know. Thank you, Mr. Jennings. And Travis, I think we have one more testifier. Is that correct?
We have two more testifiers. We have Mike Madigan, followed up by Tom Hansen. So Mike, they're both in the room, and they can Mike can go ahead and unmute himself and begin his testimony.
Excellent. Welcome to the committee, and you can introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Can you hear me? Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Michael Madigan. I apologize. The visual function on my Zoom isn't working for some reason, and I can't figure it out. I am the president and legal counsel to the Minnesota Beer Wholesalers Association, and I'm also speaking with you this afternoon on behalf of the Minnesota Beer Wholesalers Association, but also on behalf of the Minnesota Municipal Beverage Association, the Minnesota Beer and Wine Wholesalers Association, and Teamsters Joint Council 32. And all of those organizations and their members and their employees fully understand the grave and severe financial impact that the mandatory shutdown of bars and restaurants has caused to those businesses and to their employees. And they fully support financial relief for those businesses and their employees. And I'll comment very briefly on that a bit later. And they also support the proposal that allows bars and restaurants to sell prepackaged wine and beer with takeout food orders in a limited and temporary capacity. And without this temporary option, and I think Representative Tapke was alluding to this, the code-dated beverages that these retailers possess will have to be destroyed, and I'll expound upon that in a moment, since these retailers are prohibited from obviously selling these products to consumers. And in our view, this is a reasonable and momentary accommodation for these retailers to continue to operate in a modified capacity as they struggle to survive during this pandemic. We have learned, and we've heard obviously from prior testifiers, that other industry members are seeking to expand the privileges and exemptions beyond on-premise retailers, which would be at the expense of the industry members who have suffered the most under these closure orders. And specifically, they are attempting to achieve through this temporary process what they've been unable to achieve in past legislative sessions. And as you know, many changes to alcohols in Minnesota will impact many family-owned businesses and their employees. And this is obviously a very, very sensitive time financially for reasons that we all understand. And so the associations and members and employees that I'm speaking on behalf of this afternoon ask that you oppose any proposals that would go beyond the narrow takeout wine and beer proposal, specifically raising the growler production cap or changing vessel sizes that would allow breweries to sell cans and other packaged product out the door. And I think as everybody understands, most craft brewers can already sell crawlers and growlers, and they can also self-distribute packaged product directly to retail. All craft brewers can also package their beer in cans, bottles, six packs, and cases, and can sell those products to off-premise retail accounts. And it's our position that they don't need any further regulatory exemptions, which would unnecessarily benefit them at the expense of others in the industry. Now, having said that, we have had, and prior testifiers, Lauren and Lon have alluded to this, we've engaged in some fruitful discussions. We have joined with the Guild and other members of the hospitality industry in proposing a financial relief package for hospitality industry members that would provide reimbursement for the product, that the perishable product that's code-dated that has to be destroyed as a result of these closure orders. And this is an out-of-pocket loss that these businesses have suffered for the benefit of our community as a whole to keep them safe, and we support that. On the other hand, we would submit that as a result of that damage, it's not a cost that they should bear alone. If they're incurring this cost on behalf of the whole community should share in that burden. And I won't say anything further on that, Madam Chair. We hope that we can perhaps address the committee at a later time on that issue. And we have engaged in discussions with the Alliance, which is another brewers group. Those have been kind of put on hold in this emergency because we've had to prioritize, obviously, other issues. But we do pledge to continue that dialogue. The only other thing I'll say about the overage beer product is that distributors, the shelf life of draft products is much shorter than the shelf life of packaged products, cans and bottles and so forth. And the distributors will be picking up draft products from on-premise retailers. They'll do that at their expense. But they'll only be able to pick up full kegs. They can't pick up the half kegs. So that'll be, that component will be a cost that the retailers will suffer, the kegs that the distributors pick up and have to decant, empty, in other words, and bring the kegs back to the brewers will be a expense that they bear. And to the extent that a brewer participates in that, they'll also have an expense for this perishable product. So we're hoping that the legislature might consider a reimbursement program to help these folks with that out-of-pocket cost that they've suffered. In summary, Madam Chair and committee members, we believe our current regulatory system effectively balances competition with control. It's been a model of both regulatory and economic success for over 80 years. And we don't believe that in this emergency and with the uncertainty in the current economy, these sorts of major changes that are being proposed beyond the bill before you would be wise. It would be devastating to local retailers as well as to distributors. And during this, let me just say in summary that in conclusion, that during this unprecedented time in our state and nation, we want to see all businesses be able to survive, breweries, distributors, and retailers. But making fundamental and permanent changes to the established three-tier system in this environment, we would submit, is the wrong approach to achieving that goal. And I'd like to thank you all for your considerations of these issues, and I appreciate your time and particularly your service to our community in this extraordinary time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. I'm not seeing anybody on the list for questions. I'll pause for a moment in case I've missed anybody. Okay, we are ready to hear from Mr. Hansen then.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Tom Hansen, and I'm an attorney with the law firm Winthrop & Weinstein. I am testifying today on behalf of the Distilled Spirits Council of the United States, commonly referred to as DISCUS. DISCUS is the National Trade Association representing producers and marketers of distilled spirits in the United States. The bill before you allows restaurants affected by the shutdown to sell wine, beer, hard seltzer, and cider on a limited basis without obtaining a license. DISCUS is supportive of doing anything to help restaurants in these difficult times. What is missing from this list is distilled spirits, and we would like to encourage you to add it for a couple of reasons. First, adding distilled spirits would help the struggling restaurants because it is the highest margin item for beverage alcohol. We heard earlier from Mike Jennings that he was losing $75,000 a month, the gentleman from MLBA. If we're trying to help restaurants, adding another product for them would be almost life-saving for them. And then second, if you're concerned about the volume of distilled spirits, there are mini bottles or pre-mixed drinks of distilled spirits that could be sold by a restaurant. The Distilled Spirits Council has worked with other states in similar situations to Minnesota, who are working with these alcohol-to-go issues, and they have allowed distilled spirits in various manners. So we would encourage you to add distilled spirits going forward. We're willing to work with you, and thank you very much, and that concludes my testimony.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Garofalo, I believe, has a question. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Hansen, number one, I agree with you completely. This seems like this is a very reasonable proposal. Same question as I had before for the previous testifier. Can you just enlighten us as to what the stated opposition to this position is and who it is that's opposing it?
Mr. Hansen.
I haven't really heard, I really don't know who the stated opposition. There really wasn't anybody testifying here in the hearing. I think that some people don't realize perhaps that you can buy smaller bottles of spirits and their pre-mixed drinks and their various products that could really help the restaurants. I think it's a lot of that.
Representative Garofalo, any thoughts?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Hansen. And you stated this already, but obviously distilled spirits are some of the highest margin products that our hospitality industry has. So I guess I'm absent any other testimony. I'd be curious if anyone wants to speak with me offline or let me know about why
the distilled spirits are excluded, because from the stated goals of these bills, it doesn't seem to make much sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Sorry. I don't see anybody else on the list right now, but I will pause for a moment in case anybody wants to jump in. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Hansen. And I believe that we don't have any further testifiers, but I believe that Representative Koznick, who has been working on this issue, would like to address the committee.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. I just wanted to take the opportunity to recognize your work that you've done around the clock the last couple days as this issue came to the forefront a little bit more, and thank the committee's time for scrambling to have this informational hearing. And I understand the testimony and the different factions that have interest in this. My reason for bringing it forward was certainly just for the jobs aspect of it. In the jobs committee this morning, 18% of the unemployment claims, or about 81,721 people, are from the food preparation and services out of 451,000 people now unemployed in the state of Minnesota. And so this isn't really about wine and beer and to go, but this is trying to provide an opportunity to salvage the remaining jobs that are in that industry, try to salvage these businesses to hold on and make it through the next couple months or weeks, hopefully shorter, but possibly longer. And just those community establishments are kind of the heartbeat of so many communities throughout the whole entire state. These individual family-owned restaurants in all the different little towns and big towns across the state. So I just appreciate your work, Madam Chair, and I recognize it gets complicated when you start working with a variety of different interests. But the advocates that kind of put this proposal together had been working on this for quite a while and tailored it down to where they thought there could be the most consensus capital. I'm not opposed to some of the other things that were mentioned here in the hearing today, but time is of the essence for many of these establishments. The governor has acknowledged or signaled a willingness to sign something very similar to what we're talking about or in this legislation. My hope would be that he could sign it even tomorrow, and it would be effective the following day, so that people throughout Minnesota that want to support their favorite local establishment, their friends and neighbors, their community members that are running these businesses, that they might be able to go to curbside tomorrow and buy an additional bottle of wine or some beer to show their support for their community. Thank you, Madam Chair.
My mute button was getting away from me. Sorry. Thank you very much for your comments, Representative Koznick. And thank you for your work on this and getting a proposal from an idea state into a proposal state. It's not easy in the kind of environment that we're living in. We're all separated and working remotely, and I appreciate your efforts. I do have a couple members who have questions. I don't know who they're for. I don't know if they're for you, Representative, or somebody else. So Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. We can all hear you, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm a bit concerned about, I've heard several of the testifiers asking for reimbursement for costs and so forth. The state has no money. The state is broke. I'm the one that got us through in 2011, the $6.2 billion shortfall working with Governor Dayton to put that together. This bill, while I'm going to support it, is certainly not the answer. We're not going to save these bars and restaurants because they can sell another can of beer. That's not how it's going to work. Because of the governor's orders, we have put many businesses at risk, and this is very, very serious. We need to get out of the situation we're in as soon as we possibly can. So I am, you can write it down right here, but I'm calculating that with the November forecast, we will have a $10 billion shortfall. So any group that comes seeking money from the state is going to be out of luck, because when we go out of session in May, the money's not going to be coming in. We know that. And so then the governor's going to have to start unallotting. So I would suggest trying to protect what you have rather than try to, and what you're trying to do, I understand that. But to come to the state, I think, is false hope, because the state is broke. We have no money. We're going to be, I'm saying, $10 billion short in the November forecast. And we're going to really have to get creative on trying to figure out how to get out of this mess. And of course, the most important thing we can do is get people back to work. This has gone on long enough. It's gone on too long. We need to get people back to work now. So any group coming for money, it's not there. It's not going to be there. So I just want to be the realist here. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Davids. I'm sorry, my coworkers were barking again. So sorry, I had to chase them down. Next on the list, Representative O'Neill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. My question is actually for you. I'm a bit confused that this is an informational hearing. Am I incorrect in saying that the Senate already passed this bill? And so I'm wondering, why are we not taking action today? Obviously, we're in the middle of a horrendous crisis. I couldn't concur with Representative Davids more. I absolutely believe we'll be coming back to a $10 billion big hole that I don't know how we're going to fill. And the only way out of it, as you just said, is get people back to work safely. So we already have about 80% of our population working. And we have an incredibly low death rate compared to the rest of the country. We can do this safely. We need to get out of this hole. So my question is, why is this informational and what's the path from here? Because I thought the Senate just passed this earlier today.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. I'm glad that you asked that question. I did talk to Representative O'Driscoll earlier in the day. Could have had a bill to take action on by creating an amendment to another vehicle that we have. However, because of the work that our staff is doing and the way our the revisor staff is currently having to work remotely, it is greatly inhibiting, I shouldn't say inhibiting their capacity, because we all know how hard they're willing to work every single day. But in order for us to not unduly burden the revisor's office, we chose to do this as an informational hearing, and the bill will be before us on the floor tomorrow. The intention is that the Senate, because they passed it today in exactly the form that we're looking at it currently, they will send that to us tomorrow and we will be able to take it up. So they chose to declare an urgency today in order to take it up. And we wanted to be sure that at least it got a chance to have a public airing and a public hearing, although we do not have the ability to take action simply because we want to be sure that we are being respectful of the time and effort of staff. So my apologies.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for that explanation. I was rather confused as to what the purpose of this was, but we are in unprecedented times and uncharted waters. So this is new to all of us.
New to all of us. And I appreciate everybody's willingness to proceed in this manner so that we can hear from members of the public and stakeholders as well, because we're not bumping into each other in the hallways and getting to have these conversations. And so it is our hopefully our way of being able to make sure that we can include the stakeholders as well before this goes to the floor. Representative Tice is next.
Thanks.
I appreciate it, Madam Chair. I just have a couple questions, mostly just clarifying. I just want to make sure because I'm not a big drinker. So I just want to make sure that I'm on the same page with what the terms are, and maybe Christopher will help with that. I just want to know for sure what is malt liquor and what is hard seltzer.
Those are great questions. I worked in a liquor store, so I can answer that. But I think for legal reasons, I think if we could ask Mr. Kleeman to provide that clarification, if he's able.
Sure, Madam Chair, Representative Tice. I can speak to the cider. The cider is technically defined as wine legally, but of course it has a lower ABV than wine. So if you just said malt liquor and beer, and you wanted to get cider, you might not be able to get the six-pack equivalent of cider because you'd be limited to the amount for wine. So, because the limitations under the bill are specific to, one and the other product, we kind of had to grab some of the stuff from wine and throw it into to malt liquor. And the hard seltzer, I think that's just maybe comfort language, just to make sure that, because hard seltzer also, if it doesn't strictly meet the definition of malt liquor, the intent then is to make sure that can still be purchased in the amounts that are related to its alcohol percentage.
Okay.
Does that help clarify, Representative Tice?
A little bit. I know more about cider because my nephew owns a cidery in St. Joseph. So I know what the cidery part is, but, just to make sure that I'm on the same page with what's down here. This bill is kind of like a rock and a hard place for me. I understand it totally, and I get it. It's a way for folks to get rid of inventory. But I do have concerns, and my little liquor store owner in Luxembourg is always somebody I go back to all the time because she works every day. She has a couple of brothers that help out, but this is what she does all the time. And she loves to communicate back and forth. But this one gives her heartburn because she's afraid that the business she's had to fight for in order to keep open is going to be harder yet now. But I do understand this is like if I would go to a restaurant and order a wine or a beer or whatever. I mean, I don't think it's really taking away from it. So it is kind of this rock and hard place, but I really do appreciate that we're going here and trying to think of different ways. But at the same time, I agree with Representative Davids. We need to open things up. Folks are getting really feisty. They're coming up with ways to do it, to do business in a safe way. And I think that we really need to allow them to be able to show that they can do it. I think that we'd really find some really unique and interesting solutions to how to safe distance do restaurants and bars. And I'd be willing to take that chance. I think we need to start doing it for many different reasons, but I think we're not going to climb out of this well, if we don't start loosening up, and maybe this is a way, but I think we need to go further. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tice. I don't have any other members on the list currently, but I will pause for a moment to make sure that everybody has a chance to be recognized if they choose to.
Representative Tabke.
Representative Tabke.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I just wanted to reiterate a lot of what Representative Tice just said there is that I will absolutely, when this comes before us tomorrow, we'll be voting for this bill because I think it's a really good thing. It's just a really good small step. And I think that there are a lot more things that we can be doing to make this make more sense for our bars and restaurants and for the breweries. And I hope that this isn't the end of the process, that this is the beginning of finding other ways that we can help to support our local businesses through this time. So I just hope that this is not the end of where we're going with allowing to go liquor, and we continue working with all the partners to get that done in the near, very near future.
Thank you, Representative Tabke. Representative Stevenson.
Representative Stevenson.
I'm sorry, I wasn't unmuted. My fault there for not being able to successfully operate technology. I really agree with what Representative Tabke was saying, that this needs to be the beginning of the work we do. And I wanted to share with the committee a statistic that I saw today that said that even before various states around the country implemented closures of bars and restaurants, open table reservations were down 70%. The virus has really impacted the public's willingness to be out in those situations, even when there isn't a control preventing them from doing so. And that tells us that even if we start to loosen up, we're going to need to be involved in trying to work with our bars and restaurants and other impacted businesses in order to help them be successful and survive. And so I want to thank Chair Halverson for working really hard on a short period of time to get this done. I've heard from people in my community that this is going to be very helpful to them, and I'm looking forward to voting for it tomorrow.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. And I really support everybody who has said this is not the end of a conversation. I appreciate so much the members that I've heard from and with regard to their interest and need to be able to be a voice for the businesses in their district and the workers in their district. There is a lot of love going out to the state of Minnesota from the members of the Minnesota House of Representatives. And so let's continue to talk. Let's continue to bring ideas forward. Our process is imperfect at this point. And so please, if you've got proposals, ideas, make sure you bring them to leadership, to House leadership, to Senate leadership, to the chairs of the relative committees, so that we can hear what the ideas are and hopefully help guide folks along to do kind of what Representative Kosnick did, is take an idea from an idea into a proposal. So encourage everybody to keep communicating. We want to see all these important small businesses continue to succeed. So I appreciate the work everyone is doing in this time. And I'm going to pause another moment to see if anyone else has a question or a comment. And I'm not seeing any. So we don't have to take action on the bill. We will be meeting tomorrow, and it is likely the Senate will be sending us this language. So having no other business before us today, I'm going to adjourn the meeting. Thank you all.